darkness that pools in my chest. A jolt of panic hits me when I can't feel it at all. I look back at my sister. "Give it back," I whisper. Violetta does as I say. I suck in my breath as the air comes rushing back through me, life in darkness, addictive and sweet. And suddenly I can see the threads of energy again. I can feel the hum through my body, and I know where to reach out in order to grasp at the strings. I sigh in relief at the feeling, relishing the pleasure it brings me. I test my powers, forming a small rose before our eyes and spinning it in a slow circle. Violetta watches me with wide eyes. Her shoulders slump a little more, as if using her power has taken all of her strength. She can suppress an elite's ability and then release it again. All this time, my little sister has been sitting on a power that might dominate all others. 1,000 possibilities rush through my mind. "You're a malfetto just like me," I whisper, staring absently at the rose hovering between us. "An elite malfetto." Violetta looks away. She's ashamed, I realize. "How could you keep that a secret from me?" My voice is raspy with anger. "How could you let me suffer alone?"
"Because I was afraid to,"
Violetta shoots back.
"I didn't want to encourage you, and I knew how things would go for me if Father knew about my powers. You had your ways of protecting yourself. I had mine."
All of a sudden, I understand my sister better. I always thought of her as the sweet, naive one. But perhaps she wore her sweetness and naivety as a shield. Perhaps she always knew exactly what she was doing. Unlike me, who pushed people away, she protected herself by making people like her. When people like you, they treat you well. So she stayed quiet at my expense.
"I saw how Father treated you,"
she says in a small voice. Another pause.
"I was afraid, Adelina. Father seemed to love me, so how could I tell him? Sometimes I imagined myself saying, 'Father, I am a malfetto. I have powers that don't belong in this world because I can give and take away Adelina's powers.' I was a child and I was terrified. I didn't want to lose him, so I convinced myself that I wasn't like that, that my lack of markings made me better. How could I tell you? You would have wanted to experiment and Father might have discovered us both."
"You left me to fend for myself," I whisper. She can't look at me.
"I'm sorry, Adelina."
Sorry. Always sorry. What in the world can you buy with an apology? I close my eye and bow my head. Darkness swirls inside me, washing at the shores of my consciousness, hungry for release. All those years I'd suffered alone, looking on as our father lavished attention on the one daughter he thought was pure and untainted, suffering his tantrums by myself, thinking my sister was unlike me, that she was pristine. And she had let it go on.
"I'm glad you killed him,"
she adds quietly. There's something hard about her expression now.
"Father, I mean, I'm glad you did it."
I don't know what to say to that. I never thought I would hear such a thing from my sister's lips. It is this that softens the tight knot in my chest. I try to remember that she went to Terran to beg for my life, that she risked everything. I try to remember the way she used to braid my hair, the way she'd sleep in my chambers during a thunderstorm. I can only nod. The sound of commotion in the streets above us breaks through my thoughts. The bells at the Inquisition Tower are tolling. Terran must be getting ready to deliver a speech. We both listen for a while, trying to catch words from above ground, but we can't hear anything properly. Only the bells and sounds of hundreds of muffled footsteps. "Something big is happening," I say. Then I motion for us to get up. We have to get to higher ground if we want to find out what's going on. This way. I lead us farther down the catacomb tunnel until it branches off into three narrow corridors. I pick the left one. When we've walked 15 paces, I stop and search for the small door embedded into the stone. My hand finds the rough gem in the wood. My energy activates it, and the door opens. We make our way up a tiny flight of stairs until finally we find ourselves emerging through the wall that borders a dark alley at the edge of the main market square. We wander until the alley meets a side street, then peer out from the shadows at where the main square begins. The square is crowded with people. Inquisitors line the streets, funneling the people down, and in the canals, gondolas sit idle. No water traffic allowed this morning.
What's happening? Violetta asks.
I don't know. I reply as I look from the crowd to the Inquisitors. We'll have to wait. With my powers sapped, we can't be out in the open with so many people around and risk being recognized by a guard. I hold my breath as a group of Inquisitors march past our narrow street. My back is pressed so hard against the wall that I feel like I can melt into it. They pass without noticing us. I let out my breath again. I grab Violetta's hand and pull us through the shadows. We make our way forward, slowly and laboriously, through the winding streets, until we finally reach the space where the main square opens up. Here, we crouch in the shadows of a canal bridge entrance and look on as more people file into the square. The space is crowded this morning, as if it were a market day, but the people are all eerily quiet, waiting in fearful anticipation for an announcement from the Inquisition Tower. My eye wanders up to the rooftops, where statues of the gods line the ledges. They are crowded with inquisitors today, but even now, somehow, hidden behind tile and chimney, the daggers must be waiting in silence. I'm still weak, but the square's energy crackles with fear, vibrant and dark, and it feeds me. A faint flicker of movement appears on the Inquisition Tower's main balcony. A flash of gold robes, flanked by white, the glimmer of a leader walking among his men. I tense. Moments later, Terran appears. He wears formal robes, a shining coat of white armor under a flowing robe of swirling white and gold patterns. A heavy cloak is pinned over his shoulders and drapes behind him in a long train. The slant of morning light hits the balcony just right, a part of the palace's intentional design, and illuminates him in brightness. Then I notice that he brought a prisoner with him. Oh, I breathe, my heart seizing. Two inquisitors appear, dragging between them a boy with long dark hair, his slender frame weighed down with chains, his head tilted high as Terran now presses a sword against his throat. The boy's rich scarlet robes are torn and dirty. His face is solemn, but I recognize him immediately. It's Raffaele. It is my fault he's here. Terran raises his free arm.
Citizens of Estancia, he calls out. It is with a heavy heart that I deliver this news.
He pauses.
The king is dead. In his place, Her Majesty Queen Julieta will rule. Tomorrow evening, all tournament celebrations will be canceled, and the king's funeral will take place at the Estancia Arena. You are required to attend.
He pauses before continuing.
There will be changes to how we deal with traitors and abominations. Her Majesty does not tolerate crimes against the crown.
If Enzo had succeeded, he would have killed his sister, the queen, too. His nobles would have made their move, offering their support. He could be making his move now. But he won't. Not with Raffaele held hostage like this. And I realize, suddenly, that this is why Terran, not Julieta, is addressing the crowd. She knows she has to protect herself. The king's death begins to look more and more clear to me. I look on as Taryn tightens his grip on Raffaele. Raffaele winces as the sword digs into the flesh of his neck.
"Kneel!"
Taryn commands him. Raffaele does as he's told. His scarlet robes spill around him in a circle. The energy in my chest lurches painfully. Taryn nods at the crowd.
"From this day forth," he says, "all Malfettos are banned from the city. They will be moved to the city's outskirts and separated from society."
The crowd's silence breaks. Gasps, mumbles, then shouts. Violetta and I look on, our hands joined in fear.
What will the Inquisition do to them once they're banished to the outskirts?
Taryn raises his voice over the chaos.
"Anyone who turns in defiant Malfettos to the Inquisition will be rewarded with gold. Anyone resisting this order or found sheltering Malfettos will be executed."
Can I reach Raffaele? Can any of us?
I study the square. It's impossible to get close enough without drawing attention, and with Taryn holding Raffaele's life by the throat, we can't afford to slip up. Too many Inquisitors surround the square for me to get anywhere close, especially in my weakened state.
We can't save him here.
Violetta turns her head. A strange, thoughtful expression appears on her face.
"There are other elites out there,"
she whispers. It takes me a moment to remember that her power means she can also do what Raffaele does. She can tell when another elite is nearby. I glance abruptly at her.
"Aside from Taryn?"
She nods.
"How many?"
Violetta concentrates for a moment, counting. Finally, she replies,
"Four."
"Four. The others are here. Enzo is watching." Taryn scans the crowd as his voice continues to ring out across the square.
"Malfettos are a scourge upon our population. They are lower than dogs. Unworthy."
Taryn bends down to grab Raffaele by his hair, yanks him back up on his feet, and presses his sword harder against Raffaele's throat.
"People like this are a curse on our country. They are the reason why your lives are miserable. The more Malfettos we get rid of, the better off our country will be. The better off you'll be."
His voice rises.
"Do you see this, Reaper?"
He's trying to lure us out. The crowd shifts, uneasy and on edge. People look up to the roofs and down the alleys, just as they did at my burning. Taryn narrows his eyes.
"I know you're watching. I've heard that this worthless boy is precious to you. So I will make you a deal. Turn yourself in. If you don't, you will see me gut this boy right here on this balcony."
Enzo won't take the bait. We are completely trapped. I look desperately from Raffaele to the roofs where I think Enzo might be lying in wait, watching. There is no way to save him. None. We are going to watch him die. Just as I think it is all over, a shout rises from someone in the crowd. Then another. And up on the roofs, a shadowy figure stands up in front of the entire square. It's Enzo. His face is hidden behind his silver mask, but his words ring out clear and sharp, cold with fury. I look on with my heart in my throat.
"Let me make you a deal, lead Inquisitor,"
he calls out.
"And let us swear it here on the gods. I challenge you to a duel. On the morning of the king's funeral, I shall meet you in open combat in the Estensia Arena. I shall fight you alone."
The crowd has gone completely still. They hang on his every word. Inquisitors on the roofs hurry toward Enzo, but I know he can disappear in the blink of an eye if any one of them get too close. Taryn must know it too, because he holds up one hand and signals for them to stop.
If I win, lead Inquisitor,
Enzo continues,
then the Inquisition will release the boy you hold hostage. He will be pardoned of any executions of wrongdoing and allowed to walk free, unharmed.
There is a long pause.
If you win, then I will be dead.
It is going to be a fight to the death. Taryn and Enzo stay facing each other for a long time. Neither speaks. Finally, a slow smile spreads on Taryn's face. He sends a single nod in Enzo's direction.
Very well, Reaper. With the gods as our witness, let us duel.
Once upon a time, a prince fell madly in love with a demon from the underworld. When she disappeared back into the sea, he ached so much for her that he walked into the ocean and never returned. Kinetran Folk Tales, various authors. Adelina Amuteru. We head back to the safety of the catacombs. When evening starts to fall, stretching long shadows across the entire city, I finally dare to leave the tunnels again and lead Violetta farther into the city.
Where are they headed?
Violetta's voice is strained and breathless as she hurries along behind me, holding my hand. We make our way through the dark streets in a blind rush, relying only on what I remember of the city's layout.
They're growing fainter, she replies. To the right, I think they might be going this way.
She gestures toward where a series of buildings surrounded by archways begin. The university.
That's one of their safe houses.
I shouldn't be going back to the daggers. But with Raffaele held hostage and Enzo preparing to duel Taryn tomorrow in the arena, I feel the pull of the bonds I've formed over the past few weeks. My steps quicken. I cannot leave Raffaele to die like this. Perhaps Dante was the only one who wanted to get rid of me. Perhaps I can still be a dagger, and they care about me, and I can still belong.
Lying to yourself again, my dear.
My father's voice whispers in my head. I ignore him.
This way, I say after a moment.
We hurry on. Finally, as we near the university, I pause to find the entrance to the catacombs again and lead us down. It will be too dangerous for us to get inside the university out in the open, while inquisitors might be patrolling its halls. Through the catacombs, I find the worn stairs that lead up to the dark hall inside one corner of the university. I take the steps one at a time, careful not to trip. Behind me, Violetta is tiring fast. Her power must drain her much more quickly than mine does.
They're here,
she whispers. I stop in front of the door at the top of the stairs, then place my hand on the gem embedded in the wood. It opens. We emerge from the underground. The hall is so quiet that we can still hear the commotion outside the university's walls, the sounds of Inquisition patrols marching by, of raucous crowds. The next thing I hear are voices coming from within, voices that I know. I shrink into the shadows, and Violetta follows my lead. The first voice I recognize is Lucent's. She sounds frustrated.
He'll kill him before morning even comes. How can you believe a word he says?
I pause for a second longer, collecting myself, and then I start hurrying toward the voices. Violetta follows behind me. They lead us into the university's main temple, where the doors are bolted shut. Light streams in from the stained glass high above us. And there, in the center of the looming space, stand several figures I know all too well. They pause at the sight of us, too. I take a deep breath, then I step out of the shadows.
Where have you been?
Lucent asks the question first. I have no idea how to answer. Where do I even start? Enzo requested a small room in the hall of the university temple's apartments for us, and now Violetta and I are holed up inside, resting on the tiny twin cots. Lucent stands at the doorway, questioning me with her arms crossed over her chest. Enzo sits in the lone chair in the corner of the room, while Gemma and Mikhail perch on the edge of one of the cots. Violetta stays close to me on the other cot, silent and still, trembling slightly. I'm glad she's too afraid to speak. I glance at Enzo, who leans forward in the chair and rests his chin on top of his hands. He watches me in silence.
Taryn threatened to kill my sister, I reply. He was keeping her in the dungeons of the Inquisition Tower.
Enzo narrows his eyes. When did your path first cross with Taryn?
Weeks ago.
I can't bring myself to say it.
He threatened me during the spring moons before he fought you.
Mikhail furrows his brows.
Why didn't you tell us?
He asks.
I hesitate. I didn't think you would help me,
I decide to say, and it's the truth.
It was too risky to involve everyone so close to the tournament date.
Lucent sniffs and turns in the doorway so that I see her profile. She doesn't go so far as to accuse me of betrayal, but I can sense it in every line of her body. She doesn't trust me. Her respect for me has withered to make room for suspicion. I tell myself to stay calm. Even though Raffaele's capture is a large part of why I've come back to the daggers at all, in this moment, I'm relieved he's not here with the others. He would probably sense the lies I'm weaving around myself. My gaze wanders back to Enzo, who stays silent for a long time. He doesn't speak for me, but he doesn't speak against me either. Finally, he straightens in his chair and regards all of us.
Taryn is not going to keep his word, he says. Make no mistake. When we duel tomorrow, he will use it as a chance to kill not only me, but the rest of us. He's not going to release Raffaele. He knows we will all be in the crowds at the arena, and he wants it to be the last standoff. He wants an all-out battle tomorrow.
Enzo including me in the plans. I am still one of them.
What exactly is the plan then, Reaper?
Lucent says.
The king is dead and your sister has Taryn under her thumb. The Inquisitors are rounding up every malfetto in sight. How do we take Giulietta?
Giulietta will never show her face at the arena tomorrow, Enzo replies. She'll be hiding somewhere, protected by her guards. Tomorrow morning, our remaining patrons will send their supporters to attack the arena. We'll rescue Raffaele, and I will kill Taryn.
His jaw tightens.
We are going to wage war.
He glances at me.
I need your help.
When we kissed in the courtyard, I say to myself, surrounded by rain and lanterns, did you mean it? What do you really want with me?
Finally, I give him a small nod. Beside me, Violetta stirs. Everyone's eyes shift to her. When she doesn't speak, I do it for her.
I brought my sister here not just to protect her, I say, but because she can help us. She is something that can turn the tide.
Mikhail gives her a skeptical look.
Are you a malfetto?
He glances over her, searching in vain for a marking.
She's an elite, I answer. I think she lacks markings because of what she can do.
My gaze turns to Enzo. She has the ability to take others' powers away.
Silence follows. And attention.
Enzo leans forward in his chair, regards both of us thoughtfully, and then tightens his lips. I know that everyone is thinking the exact same thing.
Violetta can help us kill Taryn.
Well, he says, let's see what she can do.
Violetta's fever continues that night, a low burn that leaves her in a strange state of half-consciousness. She murmurs for me now and then. I hold her hand until the whispers stop and her breathing evens out. It's quiet in the university's temple hall. The others must have all retired to their chambers by now, although I doubt anyone is completely asleep. I want to venture outside to get away from my sister for a moment, and let the cool night air clear my senses. But the daggers have locked us in our chamber. Lucent says it's for my safety, but I can sense the subtle hint of fear lingering behind her words. Walls are slowly rising between us. The sound of steel ringing out in the hall catches my attention. I sit up, more alert now.
For an instant, I think it might be Inquisitors. They've discovered our hideout here and are coming after us. But the more I listen, the more I realize that the sound is coming from one sword. Its lonely sound echoing every few seconds from some distant chamber. I rise from the bed and press my ear to the door. It sounds like sword play. I listen for a while until it finally dies down. Footsteps approach in the hall outside. I lean away from the door. Seconds later, a soft knock sounds out. It takes me a moment to answer.
Yes?
It's me. Enzo's voice. I stay quiet and a moment later I hear the lock click. The door opens a sliver to reveal part of Enzo's face. He returns my stare for a moment before his gaze falls on Violetta's fragile form. How is she? He asks. She just needs rest, I reply. I've seen her like this enough times. It seems to happen after she uses her powers. Come with me, he says after a moment. Then he leaves the door ajar and motions for me to follow him. I hesitate, and for an instant I'm afraid that this will be the moment when Enzo finally gets rid of me once and for all. But he waits patiently, and after a while, I get up and follow him out of the chamber. One look at him sends a warm flush through me. He's clad in simple clothes tonight, his linen shirt hanging loose over his torso, its undone lacings revealing skin underneath. His hair is untamed and untied, a dark red mane falling slightly past his shoulders. One hand holds a sword. That's what the ringing sound had been in the hallway. Enzo must be practicing for the duel tomorrow. I follow him down the hall with soft steps until we reach the door of his chamber. We enter without a sound. In here, Enzo's figure is barely illuminated by soft candlelight. My heart hammers in my chest. I stand near the door while he wanders over to the tiny desk at his bedside and uses his energy to strengthen the candle's glow. His loose shirt reveals the skin of his lower neck. The silence sits heavily between us. He gestures to the desk's chair. Sit, please. Then he leans against the edge of his bed. I sit. A long silence passes between us. Now that we're alone, his eyes are gentle, not the hard, dark version I'm so accustomed to, the same softness I'd seen when we kissed in the courtyard. He studies me. There's a cloud of fear hovering around him tonight, subtle but significant. Is he afraid of me? Tell me, why did you really run away? He asks. There was another reason other than your sister, wasn't there?
He knows.
A sudden fear floods through me. He doesn't know about Dante. How could he? He's digging for something else. Slowly, I let myself revisit the night when I covered the floor of my bedchamber with visions of blood, when I scrawled words of fury onto my wall. Is it true? I finally reply. What Dante said to you in the hallway that night? About getting rid of me? Enzo doesn't look surprised. He suspected my reason all along. You were in the hall, he says. I nod wordlessly. After a while, he clears his throat. Dante's opinions were his own. Then he adds in a softer tone, I'm not going to hurt you. Were? I shiver. Suddenly the room seems colder. What happened to Dante? I say. Enzo pauses for a while, considering. Then he looks at me again. He tells me how they all scouted the city that night after seeing Inquisitors flooding the streets. How they split up. How all of them came back except one. How Lucent was the one to discover Dante's body in the alley. The story stirs the whispers in my mind, calling them back to the surface so that for a moment I can barely hear Enzo through the hisses of my thoughts. Dante deserved it, the whispers say. I murmur my condolences through a fog, and Enzo takes it all with a composed face.
How long can I keep up this lie?
We fall into a long silence. As the seconds drag by, I sense a new energy coming from Enzo. Something all too familiar to me, but foreign from him. I watch him for a while before I'm sure of what I'm feeling.
He's afraid.
Are you ready for tomorrow? I whisper. Enzo hesitates. It's so unlike him to have this aura of fear. It sends an ache through my chest, and I rise from the chair to move closer to him. Dante was wrong. I must mean something to him. He must care. Enzo watches me drawing near. He doesn't move away. When I come to sit beside him, some of his tension seems to ease, and his expression softens, letting me in. Taryn's father taught me how to fight, he says in a matter-of-fact way. I am good, but Taryn is better. I think back to how the two confronted each other before, first at my burning, and then at the spring moons. Each time their clashes lasted for mere seconds. What will happen tomorrow morning when they face each other in a fight to the death?
Has he always hated us so much?
I murmur. Enzo gives a wry smile. No, not always. I wait for a moment, and soon Enzo begins talking again. He unveils the story of them as children, sparring together, and as I listen, the world around me fades until I feel as if I were standing in the palace courtyard from years ago, looking on as a young prince and the lead inquisitor's son faced each other on a sunny afternoon. They were very young. Enzo was 8, Taryn 9, both of them still unmarked. The blood fever had not yet hit Estensia. Taryn's eyes were a deeper blue back then, but lit with the same intensity. Beside them, the old lead inquisitor looked on and called out instructions as the boys dueled. He was careful not to criticize the crown prince, but his words landed so harshly on his own son, hardening him. Enzo shouted at the man sometimes, defending Taryn's skills. Taryn would bow to Enzo after every match, complimenting him. As I listen, I picture the difference between the two boys. Enzo himself must have still fought like a young boy, but Taryn, his intensity sounded unlike a child's, even frightening. He struck as if to kill, Enzo says. I liked training with him because he was so much better than me. But he was not cruel. He was just a boy. Enzo pauses, and the scene fades. Years later, the fever swept through. He continues. We both emerged marked. Taryn's father died. After, I would wander into the courtyard and Taryn would no longer be there, eager for afternoon sparring lessons. Instead, he spent his days muttering in the temples, mourning his father, building his self-loathing, taking in the Inquisition's doctrine that malfettos were cursed demons. I don't think he hated us. Not yet. Because neither of us knew yet about our powers. But I saw the shift in him, and so did my sister. His jaw tightens. Ever since he became lead inquisitor, he's hunted elites, as well as those who help elites. Something in the way he says it sparks a memory. It takes all my strength to ask. Daphne? I say hesitantly. Enzo looks up at me. A hint of something familiar dances in his eyes, and I wish I didn't know what it meant. The pain that comes from him, an emotion of darkness and anger and guilt and grief, glitters in the air as countless threads of energy. Her name was Daphne Shoriana, he says. Tamoran girl, as you can tell. She was an apprentice at a local apothecary. His words pick away at my heart, piece by piece, reminding me that the things he loved about me might not have been me at all. He must have seen her in my face, in the olive of my skin. He must have seen her every time he looked at me. She would sneak illegal herbs and powders from the apothecary to help malfettos hide their markings. He goes on. Dyes that temporarily changed hair color. Creams that temporarily erased dark markings on skin. She was a friend to us. When we first discovered Dante, still wounded from battle, she nursed him back to health.
You loved her, I say gently, sad for his loss and bitter for mine.
Enzo doesn't acknowledge this directly. He doesn't need to. A Malfetto prince is still a prince. I couldn't marry her. She wasn't from a noble family. It didn't matter in the end.
I don't want to ask the details of what happened to her. Instead, I bow my head in respect. I'm sorry.
Enzo nods back, accepting my condolence. So it may go for all of us. We must move forward.
He seems weary, and I wonder whether it has to do with thoughts of Daphne or grief over Taryn. Perhaps both. In the silence that follows, he leans toward me until we are separated only by inches. The glow in his eyes beckons me. There is a heaviness about them, a dark depth that I might never understand. He touches my chin. His heat flows through me again, and I realize how much I've missed it right as he bends toward me.
I know who you are, Enzo whispers, as if he can sense the thought in my head.
Do you care for me only because of Daphne?
No, he knows me.
He cares for me because of who I am.
The thought floods me with exhilarating speed, awakening all of my senses. His kisses are gentle this time, one after another, patient and exploring. His hands brush against mine, running up my arms, drawing me in. Nothing separates us except the thin fabric of my nightgown and his linen shirt. And when he pulls me into his embrace, his heat sparks against my skin. My alignment to passion roars, sending my energy hurtling through me, desperate to weave its dark threads into Enzo's own, ensnaring him. It makes me dizzy, the same way I felt the night in the alley, the night I am forcing myself not to remember. It is out of control. I can't stop it. He pulls away. Then he leans his head against mine and sighs.
Stay, he whispers.
And I know that the aura of fear around him is fear of tomorrow. Of what might happen to all of us, that perhaps he cannot save Raffaele's life, he cannot win against Taryn, that in the morning he may step out of this place and never return. He is afraid, and it leaves him vulnerable tonight. I try to forget my own fears by putting my hands on his face, then running them down to clasp his neck. After a moment, I nod without a word. He settles down beside me as I curl up on one side of bed, and then he brushes my silver hair away from my forehead. Instinctively, I shrink away when his eyes settle on the broken side of my face, but he doesn't react. His fingers trail gently across my scars. They leave a path of warmth in their wake. It soothes me, leaving me drowsy. His eyes close eventually, and his breathing turns even. I find myself sinking into the comfort of early sleep, too. I concentrate on the sensation until I feel nothing anymore, until I fall into a restless nightmare of demons, sisters, fathers, and words from a young inquisitor with pale blue eyes. I heard my sisters wailing through the night. They knew what I had done, and they hated me for it. Dantel by Boren Volomir. Adelina Amuteru. Today is supposed to be the first day of the Tournament of Storms. Instead, it's an endgame with the Inquisition. The main Estensian Square, usually left open and uncluttered, has been transformed into a sprawling marketplace of makeshift wooden stalls and colorful flags. a sea of shops and people that surrounds the main arena looming at the harbor. But unlike the tournament's festivities, the atmosphere today is ominous. The air is eerily quiet considering how many people are flooding in. Here and there, lines of inquisitors observe the masses. Taryn wants the public to see us dead, right before their eyes. I walk with Violetta through the crowds. No invisibility right now. It's too hard for me to hold such a shifting illusion for as long as we'll need it. And with this many people, we'd draw suspicion the instant others bump shoulders with us. I have to save my energy for our attack. Instead, I've woven the illusion of different faces over each of ours. I changed my dark eye and the ruined side of my face into a flawless visage with bright green eyes, each of them framed with blonde lashes instead of silver. I adjusted my skin color from dark olive to light cream and my lips to a pale pink blush. My hair looks red gold and my bone structure is different. Violetta, too, now has skin as fair as a Beldish girl's, and her dark hair is instead a coppery blonde. We're still not perfect images. I never had time to train myself in mastering the illusion of faces, and even though I'm improving rapidly, there are little things that seem often unnatural. It should work if no one stares too hard, but people who linger too long on our faces will frown because they will know that something is off about us, so we move on. By the time we've reached the general vicinity of the arena, sweat is running down my back. The arena is enormous, perhaps the largest structure I've ever seen. Rows and rows of archways stacked upon one another in a giant ring of stone. The number of inquisitors grows as we near the arena. Taryn has stationed an army of enforcers here. I try to keep my face down as much as I can to imitate the rest of the crowd and shuffle past the inquisitors without looking at them. I half expect them to recognize me, to see through my shimmering illusion, but they seem to buy my appearance whenever they peer down at my face. They are searching for the dagger's allies. Threads of fear blanket the entire square, thickening right in the center of the arena.
"Stop,"
an inquisitor says to me. I pause, remembering to look bewildered and peer up at the inquisitor. He stares down at my face. Beside me, Violetta stops moving. I suck in my breath and focus all my concentration on solidifying my illusion, emphasizing the subtle movements of my face, the pores of my skin, and the details of my eyes. The Inquisitor frowns.
"Name,"
he grunts. I lift my chin and give him my most confident look.
"Anne of House Tamerly,"
I answer. I nod at Violetta, who curtsies prettily. "My cousin."
"Where are you staying?"
I rattle off the name of a local inn I'd seen during the qualifying races. "My father is doing business in Estensia for several months," I add. "We heard this morning that this year's tournament has some added excitement. Is it true?" The Inquisitor casts me another dubious look, but people are crowding behind us and he has no time to waste. He finally grunts his approval at us and waves for us to continue.
"Nothing you Beldish would appreciate," he answers. "Carry on."
I don't dare look back, but behind us I hear him turn his attention to questioning the next person. The arena had been built to hold tens of thousands of people. The archways stretch up toward the sky and down into the ground so that even though we entered the space from ground level, we now stand along a row of stone benches looking down at dozens of rows below us. Benches that wrap around the arena in circles before ending at the bottom in a wide central space. Hordes of people mill in the aisles. Among them are our patron soldiers. I can't tell which ones they are, but they are here, scattered and hidden among the masses, waiting for Enzo's signal. I crane my neck, searching for him. Violetta shakes her head, letting me know she doesn't sense him nearby. "Come on," I whisper, tugging her hand. "Let's get closer." We head down the rows until we are almost at the very bottom, then take our seats in the first row. Before us stretches the arena's center. It is flooded with water, a deep lake with channels that filter out into the sun sea. the dark shapes of Balira's swirl underneath the surface. Cutting above the lake is a wide strip of stone path stretching from where Violetta and I sit to the other side of the arena, with a larger, round platform in the very center. During a typical celebration, Balira riders will wait along the platform and call for their Baliras, and when the enormous creatures burst from the water, the riders jump onto their backs and perform stunning acrobatics to a cheering audience. Masked revelers in elaborate costumes would parade along the path, magnificent in their glittering colors. Not today. Today, white-cloaked inquisitors line both sides of the stone path. In the water, Balira's circle, their calls muted, haunting and ghostly. I turn away, then scan the rest of the filling arena. There is a cloak of fear and anxiety that blankets the entire space. Some of the onlookers seem excited, restless for the promise of blood. Others stay seated, with their mouths pulled into grim lines, whispering among themselves. My restlessness rises with them. Threads glitter in the air, tempting me. My breaths are starting to come in shallower gasps as I continue to hold our illusion steady across our faces. Violetta touches my shoulder. She nods toward the opposite end of the arena. "There," she whispers. I follow her gaze. Enzo is somewhere in the crowd. The daggers should all be in position by now, along with their supporters. Finally, after what seems like hours, all the inquisitors lining the arena draw their swords and hoist them into the air for a traditional salute. The crowds hush. I look toward the royal pavilion, where the king would have once appeared with his crown and golden cloak. Instead, the pavilion stays empty, and at the far end of the arena, Terran strides in with inquisitors flanking him. A helmet shields his eyes from view, transforming him into the fearful image of someone not quite human. Right in front of him, weighed down in chains and guarded by more soldiers, with a blindfold over his eyes and a gag in his mouth, is Raffaele. My heart begins to pound. Terran stops in the middle of the arena, then holds up his hands to the crowd.
"My fellow citizens!"
His voice echoes around the central structure.
"I welcome you to the annual Tournament of Storms, a celebration of all that is great and glorious in Kenetra."
Not far from him, inquisitors force Raffaele to his knees, draw their swords, and press them against his neck.
"This year we are doing things a little differently. Your queen leads you now, Kenetrans. You will all get to witness a historic moment, when our great and glorious nation is cleansed of the demons that have haunted us for the past decade, that have tried to bring terror down on us."
Beside me, Violetta grips my hand tighter. I look down and see that her knuckles have turned white. Terran turns in a grand circle, his white cloak trailing, and smiles at the quiet audience.
"Reaper,"
he shouts.
"A deal is a deal. I have your little consort friend here."
He pauses to bow tauntingly in Raffaele's direction.
"And we are both waiting for you. Come out, demon."
His smile fades, replaced with a chilling blankness.
"Come out so we can play."
I hold my breath. For a moment, nothing but silence blankets the crowd. The people shift uneasily, their eyes roaming for a sign of Enzo. My attention shifts to the long row of inquisitors lining either side of the stone path over the water. One of the inquisitors near Terran breaks from the formation, then walks forward until the two stand barely 10 feet apart. Some of the inquisitors draw their swords, but most hesitate, thinking that the man is still one of them. I grit my teeth and release the illusion of disguise on the newcomer. A sense of relief glides through me. Before everyone's eyes, the Inquisitor gradually transforms from a white-cloaked figure to a tall boy in dark robes, his face hidden behind a silver mask and his hood pulled low over his face. Enzo. Inquisitors lining the platform draw their swords, but Terran holds up a hand. He turns toward where Enzo now stands up. The crowd ripples with shouts, and I close my eye, savoring the wave of their fear. My strength builds. The two face each other for a moment, neither speaking. Finally, Terran tilts his chin up.
How do I know this is your true self? He shouts. Is your little illusion worker hiding the other elites here too?
Behind him, the Inquisitors press their swords tighter against Raffaele's throat.
You know who I am,
Enzo replies in a clear voice.
Why should I believe you? Why should I?
Enzo's tone turns mocking. Then Terran reaches up and removes his helmet, revealing his wheat blonde hair. He tosses the helmet away.
Show me who you really are, Reaper,
he calls out, nodding at Enzo's silver mask.
Or your friend dies.
Enzo doesn't hesitate. He reaches up and pulls the dark hood of his cloak from his face, exposing his blood-red hair. Then he puts his hand on his mask, pulls it away, and unveils his identity to the crowd. He, too, tosses the mask aside.
A deal is a deal,
Enzo calls back. Terran stares at him with a stony face. The crowd looks on. Everyone around us is stunned into silence. I sway, dizzy from the building tension. Our illusion of disguise shimmers at the edges of my vision.
It's the prince!
Someone shouts from the arena. Others take up the cry, and the revelation rips through the audience. Even though I can feel the overwhelming fear darkening the people, I can also sense the crackle of excitement, the emotions from Malfetto supporters in the crowd and our own patrons' fighters. Through the confusion, Terran nods at Enzo.
No one will interfere, he shouts. I will face you alone as long as you are bold enough to do the same.
Enzo bows his head once in response. Terran is lying. But so are we. This is a battle poised to erupt.
It's been a long time, Your Highness,
Terran says, pointing his sword at Enzo. I would have expected his tone to be mocking, but instead he's serious. Not a hint of amusement is in his voice. To my surprise, he bows his head at Enzo in genuine respect.
Let's see if you've gotten any better.
Enzo pulls long, gleaming daggers from the sheaths on his back. The metal of each weapon turns red, then white hot. Fire explodes from Enzo's hands and wraps both of them in a large ring, separating them from everyone else. The audience screams. Terran lunges forward. Enzo strikes out with his daggers, aiming for the eyes, but Terran puts up his shoulder and shields his face. The blow deflects harmlessly off his hard skin. Enzo rolls away, hops back to his feet, and whirls on his enemy again. They circle each other in a slow arc. Enzo twirls a dagger in one of his gloved hands.
You seem hesitant this morning,
Terran calls out. He strikes at Enzo with unnerving speed. Enzo dances out of the way, spins, and lashes out as hard as he can with both daggers. One of them manages to make impact, striking Terran somewhere on his side, but it looks as if someone were trying to stab through soft wood. Terran grunts, but the instant the blade leaves his side, he grins.
Use your fire, Reaper, he taunts. Give me a challenge.
Enzo attacks again. This time his blades burst into flames, carving streaks of fire in the air as he lunges for Terran. He feints left, then twists in midair and slashes out at Terran's face. Sure enough, Terran jerks his head away from the blow, but Enzo moves along with him, twin blades burning, anticipating where he'll turn, and brings his second dagger viciously up toward Taran's eyes. The Inquisitor darts away barely in the nick of time. Enzo's blade scrapes against the side of Taran's cheek, leaving a gash that closes right up. Taran smiles.
Better.
My turn. With a deep breath, I drop the disguises on Violetta and myself, then immediately cloak us in invisibility. Around us, people gasp in shock, but we are already on the move. I hurry to the small gate at the edge of the row, which leads into the lake's pathway. We cross over. Inquisitors line the pathway, poised to attack if given the command. I carefully make our way forward.
Tell me, Enzo calls out over the roar of the flames. Why do you turn your back on others like yourself?
Taran doesn't reply right away. Instead, he draws his sword and strikes out at Enzo. Enzo leaps to the side, but not before the sword's blade nicks a line in his arm. He conjures a burst of fire that swallows Taran whole, but Taran doesn't show any sign of pain. He steps out of the flames with a wicked smile, his skin crisping, darkening, and then returning to normal. The edges of his cloak fray and burn from the heat, but the clothes in contact with his skin stay untouched, as if behind some shield of protection.
I never turn my back, Taran calls out. I am the only one willing to help. Look at what we're doing right now, Reaper. Our powers are curses from the underworld, and we use them to destroy everything we touch. Destruction is a choice.
Enzo raises one hand, calling the flames hotter, brighter, until the fire turns blinding white and engulfs Taran entirely. If Taran can't see, he can't attack. Enzo hefts a dagger. The fire suddenly vanishes, and in the abrupt absence, Enzo flings the dagger at Taran's eyes. Taran deflects the dagger with his sword, then catches the dagger in midair and throws it back. Enzo ducks to the ground in a graceful sweep.
I am cursed just as you are. Yet while you continue to defend those born from the leftovers of the blood fever, I'm doing what the gods always intended.
Taran's pale eyes seem to soak in the flames that surround them, shading them a terrifying color. His lips curl into a snarl. Enzo pushes against Taran's blade, his muscles bulge under his sleeves. Taran is simply too strong. I can see Enzo's strength slowly ebbing away. Still, I can hear Enzo's voice ringing out over the melee.
Perhaps you do it because you love your powers, he shouts, mocking. And you want to be the only one with such a gift.
Taran's smile vanishes.
How little you know about me, Your Highness, he replies, even after all these years.
Enzo lunges forward and slashes at Taran's eyes. This time, his blade manages to cut the edge of Taran's eyelid before he darts away. When he looks at Enzo again, blood smears the film over his left eye, turning the pale iris bright red. Taran launches himself at Enzo. He sidesteps with him, then plunges a dagger deep into Enzo's shoulder. I gasp. The flames around them falter. He shudders, but still manages to yank himself away. The blade tears out of his shoulder. Violetta and I are now so close that I can feel the heat from the fire. We are in position. Is everyone else too? Taran's eyes burn. Enzo steps in front of Raffaele and turns to face Taran again, ready for another attack. Blood drips from his shoulder. Then he raises a dagger high in the air and waves it once. Our signal. Several things happen at once. Arrows hit the two Inquisitors holding Raffaele down. A curtain of wind smashes into the other Inquisitors nearest Raffaele. It flings them all into the water in a chorus of shrieks. From deep within the lake, two Baliras explode from the surface, translucent bodies arcing over the path where Violetta and I are crouching. I flatten against the stone. My sister follows. The Balira send tides crashing against the platform and rain down glittering water across the entire arena. Their eyes are black with fury, their calls thundering. One of them flips in midair, its enormous fleshy wings coming